The following program is paid for by its sponsors, who are solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are not necessarily the views of WMAL.
When the time has come for moving on, you can't go wrong.
The Eric Stewart Show. This is Pointing You Home.
Pointing You Home.
All you need to know about buying, selling, and everything in between. Now, here's your host, Eric Stewart.
Good morning, Washington. Thanks for joining me. I'm Eric Stewart, the host of the show every Sunday now for 17 years here on WMAL. Great, great day to you and your family. And thanks for waking up early and grabbing your coffee or your tea to join me and chat real estate. Now, this is a long time coming, folks. Every week, we keep waiting for a market like this over years, and then we get into it, and here we are. And the excitement, you know, there's this initial period of time, we all get this, where we're hoping something's going to change, and then all of a sudden some things are changing, but then they don't. They kind of fall back to what they were. It's like an anticipation of a potential change, because there may be a brief period of time where prices jump, but then the buyers disappear, and they're not willing to go and break into a new price range. Not so this time. Prices have broken to the upside so significantly across the DMV, we cannot interpret this as anything other than a significant bull market. And as I chatted with a home seller 2 weeks ago and encouraged them to wait until next year, February, to put their home on the market because of the timing of this year, and I'll explain that briefly in just a moment, I said, look, wait till February. Here's what we're in. I showed them that when I got in the business in 1987, we were in the middle of a bull market from 1985 to 1990, where prices actually doubled in 5 years. And then 1990, market flatlined, the D.C. area went into a recession, post-Gulf War, you know, just kind of muddled our way through the 1990s, and prices firmed up around 94, 95, 96, and firmed further in 97, 98, 99, and so on. And then the market took off again and went up double to three times, depending upon where you were located. And then, of course, we had the Great Recession, and prices dropped hard in a lot of areas, sometimes 50% in some places, because just too much for sale, not enough buyers, a lot of fear, and so on. All that saturation is gone. There's now no inventory to speak of across pretty much the entire DMV. And prices have jumped 30, maybe 35% now from that change in the market. Will we go higher? Personally, I believe so. I think prices will climb, and I think they'll climb, and I think they'll climb for the next 3 years. Two, optimistically. Three, very optimistically. And through next year, yes, I believe so. So, you got that coming for you. If you're not in a rush to sell, you want to think now about getting your home ready to put on the market to capture the greatest demand next year and the upside of where the market will be then. You got a million-dollar property. Great. That million-dollar property today could be worth $1.1 million next spring. If you're going to be selling because you have already purchased another home and you're looking now to just get ideas on how to approach that, great time to sell. No doubt you'll sell well. I just want to say, think about the timing. Talk with our group. Helen Flynn and I are on the show today, and Helen is going to join me in just a moment to give us some insight into what she's experiencing and some thoughts on downsizing and so on. So let's think through when the best time is for us to sell. Now, if you're buying and selling in the DMV, you know, you could sell now and buy now, and you're going to get kind of around the same price range. Next year, you'll get more, but you'll pay more, right? So the ultimate scenario, if you could buy first, would be to buy in November of this year and settle in January, February, and then put your home on the market for the spring of next year. Over 34 years, I've seen this strategy work consistently. Houses that settle in January settle for the least amount of money. Okay, houses that settle in April, May, June settle for the most amount of money. So you buy in November to settle in January, you sell in February, March to settle in April, May, and get the top dollar. So think about that. Woo! Boy, I had an interesting situation. Got to share this story. Sold a property. It's a Kettler-built home from the 1960s, and we were asking $900,000 for this home. And according to the homeowner, they got a call from another real estate agent that they know that they didn't interview. Again, they talked with the agent at some point, but they weren't really interested. and hiring the agent. And so the agent called the seller and apparently complained about them hiring me, which, you know, is a crossing of a line. It's an ethical violation for that to happen, but it does happen. And I think that this is true not just of me. I don't think I'm something special. I think that agents who are hoping that they're going to get a business opportunity from somebody and have a friendship and then are surprised that they don't even get a call are hurt, right? They get hurt. They get their emotions are tied and they have an expectation. Of course they'll call me because I'm friends and so on. And, you know, the sale of your home is a business decision. And so my client called me and said, hey, this person was complaining. And then they said that we had missed the market, that we had gone too high for the market that we're in. And of course, now they're looking for assurance from me that that's not the case. I said, look, none of us know when the market's going to peak in any given year, but I think the demand will be there for what you have to offer, square footage, lots and lots and lots of homes. So sure enough, we get an offer on the property at $885 in the first week on the market. And we just countered it back to full price, and the buyer said yes. They were by themselves in their offer, so it wasn't a multiple contract scenario, but they paid full price. They did want a home inspection, and the home inspection revealed some things which do need to get done. And frankly, my client was already thinking, we're going to probably have to do these items. And so we worked it out, and frankly, got the $900. The buyer cured the appraisal. Everything's going to sell out fine. So real estate agents get, and this is the point, real estate agents sometimes get their emotions tied into a belief that they have maybe a right to be interviewed or whatnot because they know you. Have you ever experienced that? I know I've experienced it in different kinds of work. The disappointment, well, why didn't you think of me? You know, in real estate, positioning yourself in a seller or buyer's mind as the person to talk to sell your property is something that takes time, it takes an investment, and it still doesn't guarantee you're going to get the call. Well, that same property, the buyer agent, had an assistant agent who showed up with the buyers for that inspection I just mentioned. Well, my clients have a Ring doorbell. Y'all know what a Ring doorbell is? A Ring doorbell is one that has a camera on the doorbell, and it's on the front of your home. So it's not inside recording conversations. It's on the front of the door, and it's meant for you to be at a distance when someone rings the doorbell and you're not home. You can look on your app, you get alerted, there's somebody at the front door, you see who it is, and you can actually speak through the Ring doorbell to somebody at the front door to say, hey, I'm sorry, I can't come to the door right now. Granted, you're not even in the house. So you're creating a perception that somebody's home, right? In case, you know, somebody's stopping by to say hi. Oh, hey, sorry, I can't see you right now. I'm not really dressed and ready. But it also records what people are saying outside the house. So guess what happened with the assistant agent and the buyer as they're getting ready to go in the home for the inspection? Now, this assistant agent didn't show the house, didn't write the offer, but they're working for their buyer agent, the lead in this team. And my client calls me on the phone and says, you're not going to believe this. I said, what? She said, this assistant agent, she was saying how the buyer, she said to the buyer, I wouldn't pay this much for that house. Now, the hair on my neck went up. And my client obviously was like, I can't believe that the buyer agent's assistant is saying this. Like she knows whether they should be paying or not. Now, the buyer's kind of dismissed what she said. So what's the point of all this? Is you can't control what other people do, but you should be aware that the Ring doorbell, if you have one on your house, can record conversations. So if you're knocking on somebody's door, you don't want to start talking about what you really think about the person who's inside in front of a Ring doorbell, okay? Be careful. Be cautious. Be aware that we are being recorded pretty much everywhere we go now. I don't know about you, but the cell phone, you know, seems like it's probably not going to do that because they can't possibly be recording everything I do. Who they are, I don't know who that is, but when you're carrying a device around, you've got to be aware. You've got to be aware. So anyway, we got through the inspection. The seller gave a credit to the buyer for some things. Everything's going to move along towards settlement. Appraisal's fine. So interesting, right? The Ring doorbell and how that's changing how I'm thinking now because of what that agent said. And I think at some point here, once I've gotten through the contingencies of the contract, which are imminently due, I'll pull the lead agent aside and say, hey, I just want to make you aware. I don't think your agent was aware of this, but you should probably coach your team not to be talking in front of a Ring doorbell, especially if they don't like something about the home that they're in the middle of selling. Might be disastrous for everyone involved. All right. So I've got Helen Flynn with me. Helen's going to jump in here. We've got about 60 seconds before we got to wrap. Helen, how are you today?
I'm great. How are you, Eric?
Good, good. I'm actually going to bring you back because I'm getting flagged by my good friend Ken in front of the door here. It looks like it's time for Stuart Rosenthal. Good morning, Stuart. How are
you? Good morning, Eric. Doing well, thank you.
Good. The Beacon newspaper, been around for a long time now. Is it 30 years?
32 plus.
32
yeah.
years.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yes, this is a focused newspaper for those 50 and older, although anybody can read it. And Stuart, what do you have for us this week?
Well, there you go to the store nowadays, you pick up some milk or something, and you see the larger and larger quantity of artificial milks or other kinds of milks, almond milk, cashew milk, soy milk, all kinds of things. The question rose from some of our readers, you know, what's better for you? So we have an article that explains the pros and cons, what's better and worse in terms of calories and sugar, protein content, and calcium, and all those kinds of things. So you might be interested to find out. I didn't know this, for example, but while they add, you know, milk itself has lots of calcium naturally in it, and it's in the form that's best absorbed by our bodies. So when you buy soy milk, they supplement it with calcium to have the same apparent amount. But the truth is, soy contains a compound in it that inhibits our absorption of it. So it's not going to get you the same amount of calcium from that, even though it looks like it's the same on the label. So the article is pretty interesting and tells you a lot of interesting things about the different varieties and what you should look for.
Stuart, don't leave me there. What about almond milk?
Almond milk only has 1 gram per cup of protein, so it's not so high compared to regular milk in terms of protein. It's not where you're going to get your protein from. The almonds themselves are good for protein, but almond milk is not.
Read about it in the Beacon newspapers at thebeaconnewspapers.com. Thank you, Stuart.
Thank you.
Good to hear from Stuart Rosenthal. Helen, that was a great introduction for like 3 seconds. When we get back, we'll tell the rest of the story right here on the Eric Stuart Show. Don't go away.